I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program was brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, the brand new co-working space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Learn more at 100bogart.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We are coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. This is the 166th episode of the series.
Wow.
That is a wow. And this show is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry, as my regular listeners know. Today, my guest is a bread baker extraordinaire and an incredible guy, and I'm super happy to have him here. But we're going to hold off on my long introduction for a second. And first, as I do in every show, we're going to start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to make things your own. Develop your own sense of style and discover what works best for you. Sure, when you're trying something new, it's good to follow instructions and understand the process first before getting creative. But once you have the technique and why down, it's okay to play. So build a good foundation and then feel free to be you and confident in creating your own signature style. That's my tip today. Now, I'm thrilled to have my guest here in the studio. It is Jim Leahy. He is an award-winning baker and owner of Sullivan Street Bakery, with locations in New York City and Miami, and also of Co Restaurant in New York City. Jim studied sculpture before learning the art of bread baking in Italy. His innovative no-knead bread recipe ignited a worldwide home baking revolution when it was first published by Mark Bittman in the New York Times in 2006. Jim has written several books, most recently the Sullivan Street Bakery Cookbook, which he co-wrote with his wife Maya Joseph. And Jim was the first recipient of the James Beard Foundation's Award for Outstanding Baker in 2015, and then recognized again in 2016 by the Beard Foundation as Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America. And I could go on and on, but that's quite a lot there in itself. So welcome.
Well, thank you for having me on, Sherry.
Well, thank you for coming.
It's a treat to be here. I'm really nervous for some reason.
Are you? No, you're not.
I feel like I'm like on like live TV or something.
You're on live radio.
I know, but like I just have like this nervousness about me today, which normally I don't have.
No, I've seen you live, and you're awesome. I should be the one
coffee.
A little nervous because so my listeners know I'm crossing my activities, I guess, with you. Full disclosure,
we
work together.
That's true.
I work with Jim on his PR. So, yeah, I guess I'm the one who's a little nervous.
Conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Conflict of interest. Maybe I want to make sure the show comes out fantastic and you're happy and I'm happy.
Maybe that's why I'm
listeners
nervous.
Are happy. So I think we should just be us
and
it's going to go well. How about that?
Okay. I'll do the best I can.
Okay. So I always start out with my guess of going back to how they got into the industry and their background. So going back to Italy and when you found this passion and love of bread, like can we go back there for a minute?
I'm closing my eyes. I'm imagining the 98-degree day in July of 1987, and I'm walking with a group of students, and we're walking from our dormitory off of the Via Aurelia, and we're walking, I guess, on the Via Aurelia to some little corner fruit vendor.
Okay.
And I just remember the fruit vendor handing me this tomato, and I couldn't at the time speak maybe 5 words of Italian. And he said in Italian, "Take this, try it, eat it." It wasn't a religious type thing, but okay. He said, "Try this out, young man, try this out." And I'm like, "But it's a tomato. I have to like cook it or cut it." And he's like, "No, eat the He kind of gestured, biting into the fruit, and I bit into it, and that was for me probably the most, significant food experience that I had had in my entire life. And it was kind of stupid because it was just a tomato from a small farmer on a kind of dusty commercial street in Italy.
Yeah.
But that tomato kind of was a contradiction to everything that I had ever thought a tomato was. It was juicy and flavorful and tart and sweet. The skin wasn't like armor. It was just delicate. And that was like the beginning of a love affair that I was to have with food and in part mostly Italian food, because that's the bug that bit me first.
And then the bread component of that time you were in Italy come to play?
Well, while I was in Italy, there was this popular chocolate spread that was just everywhere called Nutella.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Kind of become a big company now. But back then it was still kind of a regional European, mostly Italian thing. And I ended up, afternoon snack at the dormitory with all the students on thick, crusty bread. And so when I came back to America after being in Italy my very first time for about 2.5 months. Excuse me, I've got a belch. But you said be yourself. So I ended up having this kind of need to have that bread because Wonder Bread just didn't do it with Nutella. And I came back and I was living at the time in Stony Brook, or Port Jefferson, I think, or Stony Setauket or something like that, out in Long Island, because I was going to school out in Stony Brook University. And I just started, went to Barnes & Noble on Fifth Avenue, because, that's what you did. You had to buy books in Manhattan and bring them out to where you were living. And I bought this cookbook and started practicing bread baking from it, just to make a bread that would go well with the Nutella.
Wow. See, yeah. I did not know it started with a tomato and then Nutella.
Yeah.
I've learned so much.
Yeah. It was like, it wasn't just the tomato. There were so many food experiences that one summer that were all novel. And you know how when you're in your 20s, it's like everything is like, seems amazing, because especially if it's new, especially if it's novel, you just,
Yeah. So what was it like opening Sullivan Street Bakery back in 1994?
The Soho was a very quiet, somewhat rundown area because the art market in 1989, stock market had crashed in 1989. And by 1991, things were pretty much winding down. So I think there were a lot of art galleries still around by 91, but by 94, the art industry had sort of bottomed out. I think at one point in time, I was an art student, so at one point in time, I remember counting like 460 or 470 independently run art galleries just in Soho.
Yeah.
So you could spend, weeks looking at emerging artists, existing artists, dead artists, unborn artists, any kinds of artists, bullshit artists. And then within a 3-year period, there were like 100 galleries left over. So it was like a real shift. And that's kind of created the footprint, if you will, for Soho's eventual kind of shopping mall, you know, kind of deluxe fancy shopping mall that it is today, that a lot of the art galleries became, you know, shoe stores or you know, J. Crew's or whatever. And yet, you know, now it's going through yet another kind of transformation because, you know, brands don't need retail footprint anymore. And, you know, I think probably Soho in like another 5 years will probably be empty again.
So were you specifically looking in Soho or did the space find you?
Well, I had at that point partnered with a restaurateur who I had, you know, the story goes is I tried to open up. I ended up working 1 year, 37 jobs. Job 36 was working for Joe Allen. Amy's Bread.
Okay.
Back in 92, I believe.
37 in 1 year?
Yeah, 37. So job 36.
You beat me.
Yeah. Job 36 was, really? What's your record?
No, I'm not even close to that in 1 year, but I had a lot of jobs in my 20s. I don't know, but maybe a dozen.
It was manic though, because it was all in 1 year. So
yeah,
at the time I was living on 70 North 8th Street. You know, when it was just completely run down, there was nothing there. And
so Amy's Bread.
So I worked at Amy's Bread, and then after Amy's Bread, I ended up working at Joe Allen's restaurant, but not Joe Allen proper, his Italian restaurant Orso. And eventually, Joe became, I ended up working there, and then he decided, or his family or chefs decided to send me. Toward the end of my engagement with them, which was about four months, they sent me down to Florida to see whether, Miami of all places, to see whether I could bake the bread that I was making in the restaurant down there.
Oh, okay.
This would have been 92.
Right.
Fall of 92, winter of 92. And it was in that experience of going to Miami that I had ultimately discovered the no-knead method. Because the water in Florida at that time, in Miami, the water that you get from the tap wasn't treated like it is today, and it had high levels of magnesium sulfate or magnesium phosphate. It's magnesium sulfates or sulfates of magnesium. And these compounds act as a catalyst for certain things chemically in the dough. So if you tried to mix the dough, it would basically burn out and fall apart, which is why, like back then, everyone would say, oh, you can't make good bread or bagels or pizza in Florida. It all sucks.
They still do.
Because of the water. Well, that's holdover, but that's not true anymore. I mean, the water.
I know, I'm just saying they still do. Yes.
The water is totally different. And it's the same thing here in New York. I mean, back then, Our water was very different than it is today. I mean, municipalities make decisions on things like drinking water without checking in with it. Anyway, another subject. Okay. So I ended up figuring out that I couldn't knead dough in Florida, and I ended up making these breads. And I taught a couple people when I was down there at the time. And just kind of, you know, it was just something I didn't, at that point, explore the actual science of as to why it was happening, but I ended up figuring out about a year and a half later because I was really curious to know why Floridian water had this effect on dough and why you couldn't knead it.
And then
I kind of just kept it there in the back of my head as a kind of another way of making dough because I've also come to this conclusion that with bread making, and this is part of the problems with bread making, part of the problem is that it's so malleable, fungible, changeable, mutable. I mean, every synonym or word that you could possibly use to describe, there's 1,000 recipes to make the same bread, 1,000,000 if you wanted to. And you could get the same tangible physical end results, but approach it from a completely different way. And I think that I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
And I mean, this is one of the things I think that attracted me to the process of baking, that, you know, it was like my little lab. And from, you know, my garage, the garage I was living at in on North 8th Street, you know, from like 10 p.m. in the evening when I would conduct my work until 4 in the morning when I would conclude, it was like I could carry out an experiment from start to finish and see what the end results were. And then I had all this left collateral, which was leftover bread, which I could give away to my neighbors, my friends, my girlfriend at the time. You know, and it was kind of cool.
So cool. And so cool that, I mean, you answered the question I really wanted to know was, how did this no-knead method come about? And so it was like in the back of your mind, and then years later you decided to start implementing it. I mean, it...
Well, it was also easier for me, you know, as an activity. At that point, it was more like a hobby, something I did for fun. And then jobs were something I did to support my fantasy about becoming a visual or conceptual artist. But the bread baking was kind of like a process that kind of kept me from like losing my shit over, you know, such uncertainty and instability in my life. Because having 36 or 37 yeah. jobs in the course of the year is by definition instability. You know, it's sort of like being elected to office and having like, you know, your cabinet members and chiefs of security and all this other shit drop off within, you know. So by definition it was completely and it was just something I enjoyed doing. It was also, for me, it was easier for me to sell someone a loaf of bread. They didn't have to read postmodernist philosophy or what, know the latest trend right. in art form, or you know they didn't need all this sort of fucking intellectual fucking baggage to get a good loaf of bread. It's a good loaf of bread. Give me your money, your bread money. And for me, it this whole, and then I had this occasion while living on North 8th Street of doing a street fair for a couple weeks in a row, weekends in a row on Houston Street. It was like the initial, mm-hmm. you know, that there's a little street market on
they
Houston.
They still do that.
I was there.
I mean, it's closed and
yeah, but I was there. But yeah. I was there the first season it okay. opened. I was like part of the original lineup, and I just remembered on Sullivan Street, basically near the corner, these little old Italian ladies that, you know, mostly Neapolitan, because the neighborhood was mostly Neapolitan, buying the bread from me. And just this honest, no-nonsense exchange of, here's the bread, right. you like the bread, I give you a sample, you like it, you buy it,
yeah.
you give me money, and it was like, cool. And I think that was the light that went on, or, you know, that kind of made me decide that I wasn't going to
do anything else.
I could try to work more jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I came to the conclusion that I was also by job 35.
Yeah. No.
Not 36.
Probably tired.
Well, emotionally and mentally.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah.
Well, but, good. Yeah.
Yeah. But I also came to the conclusion that I was unemployable.
So work for yourself.
Yeah.
That's worked out.
Yeah.
And on that note, let's take a little break.
Okay.
Okay, so stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Bogart Street is finally open and ready for Bushwick. 100 Bogart is a brand new, state-of-the-art co-working space that provides turnkey workspaces, including open layout desks, meeting spaces, and furnished private offices. Members have access to top-notch amenities such as custom furniture, high-speed internet, spacious kitchenettes with coffee and tea, printers, scanners, and much more. Alongside their professional work environment, 100 Bogart also provides exclusive educational programming for any curious entrepreneur. Heritage Radio Network has made their new office home at 100 Bogart and will host many events there in the future. For more information about their co-working space, visit 100bogart.com and become a member to network, create, and educate.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
And I'm the living beatbox.
So. That's the living beatbox, Jim Leahy, otherwise known as Bread Baker Extraordinaire, Bread Master, owner of Sullivan Street Bakery.
But never call me a master baker.
Yeah, why? I guess I know why.
It just sounds like
yeah,
horrible.
Yeah, it could sound like something else. Chronic, I get that.
Like chronic master baker or something.
I won't call you that. I call you Jim.
Call me a bread chef.
Bread chef. I like that.
I like that. It's more interesting.
Okay. Well, bread chef.
Fermentologist.
Did you think this, your no-knead recipe, would become the sensation it is today? I mean, you're known around the world for this recipe. And before you answer that, I went out and got a cast iron lodge pot so I could make your bread a few weeks ago. And it... Your recipe works, just so you know, okay, listeners, good. It still works. I made bread for the first time, and it was amazing. I made bread, I'm ready to dive into your book and try a new recipe. So,
well, awesome.
But yeah, so back to the question: did you know it would be such a change in the world, really, in bread making?
You know, it's funny. I was just basically looking at survival. When I pitched or sold the recipe to a bunch of different kind of food news outlets and no one really wanted to publish it, you know. I mean, I approached Ruth Reichel and Gourmet. Mm-hmm. And I massaged the entire editorial board and gave them free classes, and they were all won over, but Ruth herself just didn't at the time think that that it was that significant or interesting.
Well, I was at a talk that she did with you, which was awesome, and she did say
she can never, it was a big regret. Well, what's really weird is that she keeps apologizing
in a sense, and
it's like it's okay. It's totally cool.
It is okay.
I mean, I love that magazine. I thought it was I liked also the direction she had started taking it in, which is really more about sociology or society and food, not just, you know, like do you understand when you go to a deli and you get a tomato, one of those insipid tomatoes or a supermarket, like the conditions under which the farmers are treated, and it would make you look differently at the stuff that we do, you know, we take for granted. So I thought that was kind of cool. But then I shopped it to Dana Cowan of Food and Wine, and it just didn't suit, you know, the lifestyle magazine that she kind of saw as, you know. But she suggested brilliantly, and said, why don't you give Mark Bittman a call?
Oh,
and so I just shot him an email, the famous email saying, I can teach you. It was like, you know, like the snake oil salesman, I'll teach you how to make a loaf of bread better than da 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 da. And even a four-year-old could do it. And that was enough to kind of get him interested. And then, of course, he came in. I showed him how to do it. He did it himself, just vis-a-vis instruction, just from a verbal instruction. And he was so blown away by it that he published the recipe. And then it kind of became at the dawn of the food blog, it became viral. But I didn't, the person who I was, shy, maladjusted, et cetera, I didn't capitalize on it and turn it into mine and make it into this thing that I coveted or protected. So, I really kind of just let it go out and become its own thing, which is kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone makes my bread or the no-knead method in some form or fashion. And, you know, in the end, it becomes theirs. In turn, it becomes their personal experience with this miracle of bread baking, which is something that humans have been doing in a form or format that we know for probably close to 10,000 years, but has its origins, you know, even further back. You know, it's a very early form of ritualized food making, food practice, and it also kind of coincides with the birth of language, and also with, you know, sedentary,
yeah,
you know, civilizations that were doing more agriculture, less hunter and gathering type of things. So it's kind of cool.
It is kind
fire,
of cool.
Fire, wood, fire, ashes, burn, wheat.
I have so many questions for you. I don't even know. Let's talk a little bit about the projects you have going on right now, because you have Sullivan's Street Bakery. You have a pop up right now in Hell's Kitchen, and across the street you're doing some renovations.
Yes, we're doing renovations at the bakery uptown in Hell's Kitchen, and we should be open sometime between February 20th and March 15th. We're shooting for the Ides of March. For the opening, and if we can get open by the Ides of March, on the Ides of March, which would be so cool, I think we'll hand out little laurel leaf kind of wreaths for people's heads.
Wow.
So we can be all Roman. I'll even like get a toga and wear a toga just in honor of the 15th of March.
I'm envisioning a press
but I'm
release.
Not going to bake, but I'm not going to bake in a toga. I just,
okay. So you have that. You also opened recently down in Miami, wholesale.
Yeah.
Going to be retail maybe sometime this summer or something? I don't know.
I think by the fall. I think by October, because we're building a brand new building to house the bakery in, the retail space. But the wholesale bakery is up and running, and we're kind of putting our roots down
in Miami.
And it's a wonderful, it's really nice after all these years to come back there, and I've been traveling there, and I've watched the food community blossom. It does, you know, I mean, yes, lots of name brand chefs and restaurant groups go down there, and then they open, and then they close, and then they open in another iteration, and then they close, usually on the beach. But I think, you know, but there is now like a real kind of Miami sensibility food scene that's its own thing. It's not quite New York's.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's got my hometown.
It's got its little Latino influences, and it's got its, you know.
And you're in Little Haiti, which is, everyone's saying, is up and coming area, a little above the design district. And I'm excited for that. And then just you have also company
restaurant
here,
yes,
making pizzas and wood-fired dishes, wood-fired, and it's fantastic.
Dish. Yeah. I love Co.
Yeah.
I heart Co.
Okay, so since we're short on time, let's go to, since I wasn't sure at first the episode you were going to come on, and so I have two questions from two past episodes from previous guests, and I'm going to ask you both of them.
Okay.
So on episode 162, I had on Miley Carpenter. She's the editor-in-chief of Food Network magazine. She's a big fan, and she wants to know, pretending that when your outlets is closed, such as Co. is closed, and you want to order pizza, who do you call?
Shit. I'm sorry.
Shit, I did not know that name.
No,
of
I would
pizzeria.
Say if I were just to get like to get an individual pie, or it's funny. I'll make pizza at home. I'm so kind of used to this lifestyle of like I make my own pizza. But I like, you know, of all the slice joints in Manhattan, like if I needed a pizza pie, because I, you know, have three children, so the individual pies don't work that well with the kids. I would go with Joe's. Joe's on the corner of Carmine
West Village.
In the West Village, I think it's the ultimate slice. It's still like
it's a classic. It is a solid slice.
Yeah,
it's a good answer.
But in terms of like, you know, it's like
you make your own.
Make my own. Sorry.
It's all good. Okay, on episode 165, I had on John DeLucy. He's a chef owner now of Empire Diner and Bedford & Co. And he wants to know, would you like to have coffee?
I would love to. Tell John, I would love to. Okay. He's historic. He's OG.
Well, he said he is, and he's like, he said he loves you. He loves you. He feels he knows you because he has your books and he makes your bread. And but you guys don't know each other.
And he wants to have coffee.
I
don't know anyone in the restaurant industry anymore. It's like it's grown so fast.
That's not true.
Well, I mean, we're all so busy just dealing with our own lives that it's like, you know, it's really difficult. But yeah, I would love to hang with
you.
John.
Could do that. And yeah, Empire Diner is pretty close to Co. and your Chelsea Sullivan Street Bakery too. So, okay, great. So I did a little chef matchmaking on the show.
Matchmaker, make me a match.
And we're going to sing into a break and come back and do my speed round game and talk some industry news. This is on the Industry and Heritage Radio Network.
The industry man.
It's time for my speed round game, Jim Leahy.
Okay. Is this like word association?
It's a quick, it's a quick fire. It's a chocolate or vanilla type of, you pick your preference.
Chocolate.
Me too. So that was the test. Now we got 10 more.
Okay.
You ready?
All right.
Eat in or eat out?
In.
Wine, beer.
Wine.
Cocktail or mocktail?
Wine.
Skip. Okay. Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Communal table.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
This is a tough one. All-inclusive.
Okay. Teaching a hands-on bread class or writing a bread book?
Teaching a hands-on bread class.
Oh, yeah. I could have guessed you would have gone with that one, but I don't know. You're good at writing books, too.
Contact with the people.
This is just for whatever. Hamilton Day or any other national holiday?
All the national holidays that honor people that have made our country wonderful. And I think next year, instead of Hamilton Day, we're going to have our wassail on MLK Day.
Okay.
Because I think MLK Day was like totally underrepresented, and no one seemed to give a shit about Hamilton's birthday last year, this year. So, but I'd say it was underrepresented too, except for you. But I think we need to honor. Like, I think there are either that or eliminate all national holidays and just, you know, it's turn this into like a capitalist, you know, kind of state. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, we need to start like recognizing like things that people have done that were real sacrifices that kind of give us the good things that we have today. And of them, I think one of the most important are our civil liberties and our civil rights, not just me, because I feel horrifically privileged, but people that are not represented, you know, especially in our mostly white male Congress. Yeah.
Let's not do politics, but I guess I asked for it with my question.
Yeah, what you deserve.
It's all political.
Life is politics.
Okay, two more fairly easy ones. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
you can't like say Bronx. Just kidding. Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Sorry, I guess Manhattan, I'm not being fair.
No, I gotta. I mean, Brooklyn's way cooler than Manhattan, but I'm gonna go Manhattan because Brooklyn's too cool.
Okay, good reasoning. And that is the game.
Oh, the hell I do. What's my score?
Well, my dad keeps score, and he has his own scoring system, but I should get an email later today with a score. I'm serious about that. I'm sure he's blushing right now that I'm talking about him again.
I think the Bronx is like probably the last borough.
Okay.
Last borough standing that's like represents what New York.
I should have them all in there. I should have Staten Island, Queens. I don't know. Maybe this will change the game.
Yeah. But no one wants Staten
Island.
But
I'm always, yeah.
And Staten Island really technically is part of Jersey. It looks like New Jersey. It's right. It's so close to New Jersey, you know. Smells like New Jersey. Sorry, Staten Island.
All right. That's not. Okay.
By the way, I have to just, as a nod to Staten Island, my family originally came from Staten Island.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, not originally. They're originally somewhere from Central Europe and Ireland, supposedly.
Okay.
But they did live in Staten Island in the 1850s.
Good to know.
I know.
Okay, let's talk about one industry news piece that was big news in our industry. So that's why I brought on the subject is the James Beard Foundation has named a new chief executive. Florence Fabricant wrote about it in the New York Times. So Susan Ungaro, who was for 11 years the president of James Beard Foundation, she had resigned in December. So they just announced that Claire Reichenbach is the new chief executive. There's a new title, not president, chief executive. And she's not someone from the food world. She is the founder of CJJR Consulting in New York and has represented clients such as New York Public Radio and Samsung, and it's a big honor and exciting to see how she's going to lead the organization. So, any thoughts on that?
You know, I'm not familiar with her work and her professional life previous, but I'm sure that knowing how thoughtful both Susan and the Beards are, that they probably made a really good decision.
Yeah.
I think the foundation's really cool. I think it's trying to find its, the food world, the restaurant world is changing so rapidly. It's really trying to sort of like find that relationship with us professionals to help us, guide us through what all these changes to some degree and be that kind of professional support for people in the industry. I mean, really at the end of the day, the foundation kind of does provide lots of, boot camps, seminars, think tanks for industry people to sort of like try to problem solve the many problems that face us today.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think it said it was a unanimous decision for in the selection process of picking her, and we'll see.
Well, she's got the non-for-profit background,
says she expects to build on marketing opportunities with other organizations and commercial brands. So stay tuned to see what happens with James Beard, and stay with us. We're going to take one more break, and then I'm going to do my solo dining experience, and we have the final question. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
So I'm not going to make any big decisions.
And we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. We're good.
We're good.
We're good.
We're good. All is good.
So but I have. It's time for my solo dining experience. I have to give a little apology and correction from my last week's show. On my solo dining experience, I talked about going to Shoji at 69 Leonard Street. I realized I had said the chef's name was Derek Wilson, and it's Derek Wilcox, and I apologize. And
sorry, Derek.
Yes, sorry, Derek. Your meal was fantastic, and I hope to come back there sometime soon. So now it's time for my solo dining experience this week, and it is at Westbourne. Here's the rundown. The location, 137 Sullivan Street, Soho, New York City. The concept, a nostalgic nod to the irreverent spirit of 1960s Los Angeles, committed to neighborhood hospitality and giving back to the community. The owner, LA native, Camila Marcus. So why did I go? Because I know Camila, and I knew she was creating a special restaurant. My experience. I went in for a late lunch. It was still pretty busy at the time from the traditional, I guess, 1 o'clock lunch crowd. It was about 2:15 when I went in. I spotted Camila, and I ordered. The ordering is at the chef's counter, not a chef's counter, but at the counter, and then they bring your food and drink out to you, and there's also a self-service area in the back where you can pick up water and utensils. So I did all that, and I took a nice seat on the comfy banquette. So what did I get? To drink, I had West Bucha, which is celery soda with kombucha. It's delicious. And I also, to eat, had Sunset Grains, which had wild hive grains, almond butter, mitake mushrooms, kale, chili oil, and I added an egg. My take, everything was delicious. It was a great combination, and I'd say it was a healthy, delicious lunch. The ambiance. It's a cozy cafe with a sustainable design that includes reclaimed wood, custom furniture, and nostalgic LA art. And it's pretty. It has light from the windows, and there's communal tables, and even the bathroom is really lovely. It's perfect for meeting friends for a healthy and hearty veggie meal, because I think I missed mentioning this. This is an all-day cafe, and it's vegetable-focused. Interesting tidbit, Camila, who is also the co-founder of Tech Table, she's partnered with Robin Hood Foundation and is giving 1% of every purchase to benefit her Soho neighbor, The Door, which provides free youth development services, including hospitality job training, which she's then hiring employees. Personal fun fact, I happened to go back last week again to Westbourne, and I met my friends of the Durst Hospitality Group in the morning for breakfast, and we had coffee, and I had their coconut chia pudding bowl, and that was delicious as well. So the cost of my lunch was $29.40, and that's including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, and the website is westbourne.com, and that's Westbourne. Ta-da! I realized this was on Sullivan Street.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like I planned that on purpose.
But was that the place that used to be called Navy?
Yes.
Okay.
Totally would not recognize Navy. It was gutted and completely redone.
And do you remember when it was Jean-Claude?
Maybe sort of a little bit, but I don't think I ever dined there.
I'm dating myself.
Yeah.
It's been so many things.
Navy. It's a really nice space, and it's worth checking out.
A lot of people have been fed out of that little location. After all these decades.
Tough business.
It is a brutal business.
Well, we could spend a whole other show talking about that. But
it's brutal and beautiful. It's brutiful.
Brutiful. Time for the final question.
Okay.
Next week, my guest is Richard Blaze. He is a celebrity chef known for his win on Bravo's Top Chef All-Stars. He is a chef partner of Juniper and Ivy Restaurant and Crack Shack, both in San Diego. And he has a second cookbook out called So Good.
So good.
So good.
So good.
What would you like to ask, Richard?
Richard, were you born with that Tintin style haircut, or was that something you picked up along the way?
Okay.
Because he looks like Tintin incarnate. If Tintin had grown up. You know what I mean?
I know his haircut.
He's got the little...
I'm wondering if it was a Top Chef haircut.
You never know.
You know?
I'm jealous because I can't like do shit like that. So I gotta.
Well, I've got
the razor going. That's about it.
Yeah, it's a good look, and that's the show. That went so fast, right?
It was like a blink of the eye.
Yes. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm not nervous anymore.
You're not? No. I'm not either. Well, we're done. But yeah, I wish we had more time, but I'm, as you know, or people know, I mean, you're incredible. And everything you've done and all of everything you do and your restaurants and bread baking sensation. It's very admirable.
Well, we hope when the store is opened up after our, Ides of March celebration, March Madness.
March Madness.
We are hopeful that we'll even start doing classes back at the bakery as well, which should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot of space there too. It's going to be bigger. So.
It's going to be, yes, significantly bigger.
Oh, cool. Something to look forward to.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. So my guest today has been Jim Leahy. He's a James Beard Award-winning baker and owner of Sullivan Street Bakery and Co-Restaurant. His websites are sullivanstreetbakery.com and co-pan.com. And co is spelled with this, stands for company, so it's with a C, C-O. You can find him on Twitter at Jim Leahy SSB.
But, you know, I never used Twitter, even though but you could try that. But you could also try, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. The same as on Instagram.
Jim Leahy SSB, yeah.
On Instagram.
Yeah, Jim Leahy.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, though. I see you have an account there.
Yeah, but the problem is if I were to go on Twitter, I might be tempted to, make running commentary about everything that's going on.
Yeah, it's gotten very political over there. Stay on Instagram. It's happy food.
It's just stupid. Yeah, it's
Okay, so is on Instagram is accounts, also Sullivan Street Bakery and Co-Restaurant. You can find me on both. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. Websites BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org, and we're on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks again to Jim. Thanks to Jim's fabulous assistant, Peter, who helped with this.
We love Peter.
We love Peter. And thanks. We also love my fabulous engineer, Vitor.
Yes, Vitor. We love Vitor.
We're lots of love today.
I heart Vitor.
I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next week with another live show. I hope you'll tune in then. And thank you for being part of All the Industry.
Thank you so much for having me on, Sherry. Now we can do the beatbox again, right?
Okay, ready? Go. I'm not beatboxing very well.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.